Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, the Juror 13 program. My name is Denny Griffin, and for the next 45 minutes, I'll be your host, and we'll be discussing a case from a murder case, a double murder case, in fact, out of New Hampshire. Before I get to that, I would like to make one announcement. What we're going to be talking about on this show and in future shows is serious business. We're going to be talking about true crime. In almost all cases, it's going to involve a victim who is deceased. And in many cases, it will also include a perpetrator who's been convicted or alleged to have done the crime. And these are the types of situations where emotions can run pretty high, and I understand that. And I want to hear on this show tonight and in the future all viewpoints. We don't want to exclude anybody or limit it to just people who are like-minded. So I want to hear from everybody, but I have certain ground rules that I've established and I want to follow, and I thought it was appropriate to mention them now. First of all, I don't allow profanity. A hell or a damn is okay, but we get into the F words and so forth. That's where I draw the line. So that is not acceptable on my program. The second thing is I don't come on the show to be abused verbally. My panelists or guests are not here to be abused verbally or insulted or laughed at. We're here discussing serious matters. They deserve serious discourse. So, again, all views are welcome, but if you're going to call in with a comment or an opposing viewpoint, please conduct yourself civilly. Make your point as an adult, and if it's a question or comment directed to a particular panelist or to me, we'll respond with our answer. But I'm not going to let any of the this program or future programs deteriorate into shouting matches and people being insulted or laughed at or intimidated or bullied. So if you are out there and you do want to call in and voice your opinion, that's beautiful. Love to have you. But only if you're going to do it in a civil manner, treat everybody with respect, and you'll be treated the same way. Those who have a difficult time following those guidelines will not last too long on the air. I'm not Jerry Springer. This is not a Jerry Springer show. So having said that, I hope I haven't lost all the audience, but that's it's only fair that I let people know in advance how I expect people to conduct themselves on my show. Okay, what we're going to be talking about tonight is a case out of New Hampshire. Involved a double murder. Occurred March 13th of 2006. At that point, the police responded to a 911 call from an individual at the Allstate Concrete Pumping, located at 17 New Salem Street, and there was a report of an unconscious male. Upon arriving at the scene, the police discovered the body of a man named Roberts on the floor, and he was a 54-year-old of Wakefield, New Hampshire. And they also discovered the second body of a man named Zamiti, Zammitti, age 39. And through investigation, they determined and charged Sean Fitzpatrick with both homicides. Fitzpatrick went on trial for the two murders in July of 2008. And the first trial resulted in a mistrial in August of 2008. He was retried this year and on February 19th found guilty of both murders and is currently in prison. I believe that he's doing life without parole. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about that case. I am not that familiar with it. I only know basically what I've just read about it. But we have with us tonight as panelists two people who are familiar with the case, and they're going to share their insights with us and tell us what they know about it, what happened, what they thought of the first trial, the second trial, and the verdicts. And as always with Juror 13 panelists, we're going to use their Juror 13 chat room names. So let me first introduce Later Trader, and we will call, I think, just shorten it up to Trader. Trader, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Denny, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Hey, would you like to start us off, please, by telling us a little bit about how you got interested in the Fitzpatrick? Well, I guess you were interested in both trials, right, from the start of this?
Well, yes, I was. I just want to give a little bit more of a background to the case here. The actual murders took place in Massachusetts, in a town called Wakefield, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. which is a bedroom community of Boston, about 15 miles outside of the city of Boston. It's got a population of about 28,000 people. I used to live there about 30 years ago and actually worked for 5 years in a location about a block and a half to 2 blocks away from the site of this murder. And it just so happened that on March 13th, the year of the murder, which was, I believe, 2006, I was tuned into the nightly news on the Boston television channel. I've lived in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. And at that time, there was a leading story about a double murder in Wakefield, Massachusetts. And one of the people that came on the panel happened to be, I had been a social worker in Wakefield and happened to be a person that had been a client of mine as a child, way back when. He was not involved at all in this case, and I won't use his name at all, but he was adjacent. He was working in a building adjacent to where the murder took place and just happened to be interviewed by the television folks that evening, as to what happened at 8 a.m. or approximately 8 a.m. in the morning at that location. And so that caught my interest immediately. From that point on, I've been following the investigation, which took about 3 months before anyone was charged in this case. And the interesting facts of it are that it does lead into New Hampshire, into a town called Freedom, in New Hampshire, a very small town called Freedom, which is located about central east in New Hampshire, about 100 miles away from Wakefield, about a two-hour drive. And that town is a very small town. It's more of a vacation community on Ossipee Lake, or Lake Ossipee in New Hampshire, where people have summer homes, and some of those summer homes are used year-round nowadays. Some people, of course, use their summer homes in the winter for weekends. And as we find out later on in this whole thing, the person charged with this crime was a resident of this town, and the family also had property. The victim's family also had property on this lake, which makes it a case where we have both the state of Massachusetts State Police, the Wakefield, Massachusetts local police, the New Hampshire local police, and the New Hampshire State Police all cooperating and working together to effect an arrest and eventually effect a conviction, although it's several years later. So that's my connection, and that's how I came about this. I also happen to know people that I worked with in that area in Wakefield, Massachusetts, who grew up with one of the victims, for Chester Roberts, the second male killed at that crime scene.
So you were very close. I mean, from the geographical standpoint and being in the area and familiar with the area and know people that knew That's one of the victims, anyway.
That's correct, and it's not a personal connection in terms of knowing either of the victims personally, but it's certainly something where the curiosity and the knowledge of a crime is just 6 degrees of separation, shall we say?
Okay, Trader. Thanks for straightening me out too on my error about where it took place. I was reading New Hampshire, and I assumed everything happened there. Let me go to our next panelist now for an introduction. The next panelist is N.H. Red. Red, welcome to the show.
Hi, Denny. Thanks for having me. I was going to make the same correction to you on that.
Okay.
It did involve a lot of us here in New Hampshire. I myself are connected from the New Hampshire aspect. I know the Zimitti family. I got to know the Chester Roberts family during the trials. My family lived right next to Sean Fitzpatrick. And unfortunately, he tried to use my mother as his alibi. And she was one of the main witnesses that I think helped convict him. He really got in with my family very tight. I never liked him from the moment I met him. So I know that the Middies, I know the New Hampshire aspect. I know his actions before and after the murders. I saw him often after the murders with my family trying to convince my mother that she saw him at an earlier time in the day than she actually saw him. My mother's very routine in her day. She talks to me every morning at 8 a.m. We talk for almost 45 minutes. She does her stuff. She goes for her walk, you know, at a certain time every day. She's gone for so many minutes. And he tried to change that and intimidate her. And that's pretty much my connection with it.
So you, as a trader, were very close to the situation, too. I mean, you knew the players or some of the players.
Yeah, personally involved, yeah.
Right. And Red has a lot more close connection in terms of knowing the emotional ordeal of this whole case as it went along, especially the disappointment many people felt at the hung jury after the first trial, particularly with so much DNA and circumstantial evidence pointing only in one direction.
Correct. I was in the trial every day for the first trial, and it was very emotional and long and draining, and it was disappointing with the hung. I couldn't believe that. But we're grateful that the second jury, you know, did see it the way it is.
I'm ignorant here about the case other than just what I'm hearing from you folks and what a little bit I read. But the hung jury, the mistrial, what was involved with that? Was it a rogue juror type situation, or what do you think caused the first mistrial? Trader, why don't we start with you, and then we'll talk to Red.
Well, I have my own theory about that, because it was very interesting that the first trial, the judge was not available in the afternoon, and the trial took place 4 hours a day for virtually 5 days a week for 4 weeks. And maybe that's my own opinion, but I think that may have influenced some jury members to not be fully concentrating on the impact of the DNA evidence, of the toll road evidence, and we haven't gotten to the toll road evidence, which I think is an ingenious way of connecting all this together. There is a real hero in this case, and that happens to be a neighbor up there in that New Hampshire community who was very conscientious about the use of his Easy Pass. We call it Easy Pass. I don't know what you call it in other states, but it's the transponder that sits on your car, and when you go through a toll booth, it registers as you go through the toll booths. And what the defendant did in this case was actually steal a neighbor's car, a truck, drive it down to Wakefield, Massachusetts. It was clocked through each of the toll booths on the way down and on the way back, and by accident, one of the toll collectors, although the defendant paid by cash, one of the toll collectors did not register a no sale on the toll device. So it got recorded, and someone who lives in New Hampshire in the summer and vacations in the winter in Florida noticed that he had a toll charge on his transponder. And of course, he was in Florida, so he called the toll authorities in New Hampshire, and that's part of the miracle of this case, is how it was found out that his truck actually went from New Hampshire down to Massachusetts on the day and during the times that this murder took place.
Interesting. Very interesting aspect. Red, what's your opinion on the first trial, and then after you tell us what you think, then we'll start taking his phone calls. We got a couple of calls already holding. So why don't you tell us your impression of the first trial and why it ended the way it did?
I have to agree with Trader on that the it was very short days. I watched the jury daily. I can't say not all of them were engrossed in listening, but some of them were just laid back and getting, you know, it was long, and it was, you know, took a long time that I don't think they were paying as much attention as they should.
Right. I mean, I was very frustrated by that. It was carried on True TV as well, that whole first trial, and also on CNN live video feeds from time to time. And it was very frustrating to see that things would be stopped at 12:30 or 1 o'clock, and the jury would go home and have virtually 20 hours before they had to report to court again.
Yeah, that does seem a little weird. Okay, if anybody has a question or comment, you can reach us at 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982. And our first caller is from area code 727. 727 caller, you're on the line. Please go ahead. Hello? 727 apparently has left us. Let me switch to the 414 area code caller. 414 area code, you're on the line. Please go ahead.
Hi, Denny, Leader, and Red. This is Doge, and I'm calling in a question for Lovelaw. She would like to ask Red if Gert is enjoying her walks now.
I have to say that after the mistrial happened, she stopped walking. She became very skittish and afraid. And when she gets back from her vacation, she went on vacation after the last trial ended with a good verdict. When she gets back, she is planning on starting to walk again.
Oh, great.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Okay, so I'm assuming that the situation that had someone upset and interfered with their...
Yeah, Gert is my mother, and she was, like I said, Sean's supposedly alibi, and her walk was the main thing that was put in this trial, that she didn't do it every day, and she ended up stopped doing it, one, because there's a lot of people that knew where she lived and watched her and came up and talked to her, and she got skittish. She is in her 70s, and, you know, she kind of got a little gun-shy.
Well, it's understandable. I'm still showing the 727 caller on here. Let me try that one more time. Hello, 727 area code. If you're there, you're on the air. Okay, apparently 727 is not there. Let's move to the 417 area code.
Well, it's understandable.
Caller from 417, you're on the air.
Hello. I didn't know I would be on so fast. I have a question for LT.
Okay.
Are you ready for mud season, buddy? Sorry.
You know, people from across the country don't realize that in New Hampshire and Maine and parts of Vermont and Massachusetts even,
hello.
That,
Oops, sorry. I'm gonna move.
The roads, the dirt roads up there, and especially where some of these summer camps are, you know, when the ground thaws in the March and April, we get mud, and sometimes it's really hard to get around without front wheel drive, you know.
Dude, no kidding. Well, and I would also like to say hi to Red.
Hi.
Hi, Red. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay. Glad this is over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet you are. How's your mom?
Mom is doing, she's doing good. She's vacationing and enjoying it.
That's great.
Enjoying it very much.
Well, good, because she's a hero of us on J13, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
We wanted Gert for president in 08, but we will settle for 12. So hugs all around, girl, and I'm glad that it came out the way that it should have.
Thank you. And, you know, day 13 also helped Gert get through it all. I read her all your well wishes all the time, and it really lifted her spirits.
That is really, really good. And I don't know if Jenny knows that we had a J13 T-shirt that Red put together for her mom.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Where is that?
Yes. Red, did we not?
Yes, you did. In fact, the district attorney for Massachusetts took pictures of it.
Oh, wow.
Great.
That's great.
And I have not seen those pictures, and I would really, really like to.
When she gets home, I'll take my own picture, because I don't go up to her house when she's not there.
That's cool. But I would like, I would like everyone to know that J13 was behind Gert all the way. Both trials.
Right.
All the way down the road.
Well, she was such a key witness in terms of alibi and in terms of the defendant's behavior after the fact, and what,
yeah.
You know, it really was critical that he would behave in such ways after the trial, and she is so precise in her daily habits that it really helped out in terms of destroying his alibi.
Absolutely, LT. I agree. I think she was probably the key witness, because he went out of his way to use her, and it ended up that she outsmarted him.
Right.
Well, what I have to say on that is what most of you guys don't know, unless you went to the second trial, because the second one wasn't televised, is new evidence was put in from Gert. He had sent her a letter in the mail, and I think that letter actually helped with the prosecution this time around, because he was pretty, without using threatening words, he was pretty much threatening her that, you know, with all caps, remember, you're the only one, you saw me, and, you know, and really intimidated her. And they,
you know, Red, I don't think most people know about that letter.
No, because that was,
I don't think
the
they do.
Trial. No.
Right. Well, I think that was absolutely a complete threat.
Yeah.
It was.
And it scared her. You know?
Oh, I bet it did. But she stood up, and she's our hero, and J13 loves Gert.
Thank you so much.
And you too, Red.
Thank you.
Okay, take it easy.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for the call.
I didn't even know about that letter that Sean had sent. Now, when did Sean Fitzpatrick send her that letter?
He sent that letter while he was being held before the first trial.
Okay, so
yeah.
It was during that two-year period.
Yeah, and it was given to the DA, but they didn't use it the first time. It had a lot of other personal stuff in it that the family really didn't want put out there to the world.
Yeah.
It was going to hurt other family members.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can understand.
Yeah.
Do you think that was part of the reason why the second trial was not televised as extensively? Mm-hmm. It was not covered in the media as well as the first?
You know what? I have no idea why they didn't televise it. They didn't hardly ever have anything on the news about it.
Right.
Now, I was very surprised on that, because it was such coverage on the first time around,
mm-hmm.
that the second time they didn't. And I don't know why. Is that, or people just didn't want to hear the same stuff going on?
Well, I wonder also if whether the judge or whether the prosecution thought that it was not beneficial.
I don't think it helped having it televised. I mean, it made a lot of people. I know of a few witnesses that didn't go on because of the being televised.
Right, right. Yes, I think I understand that completely. I mean, the first trial, I mean, in a sense, there was a certain... The further away you get from the actual events, I mean, we heard lots of opinions about various people involved, not the victims, but the victims' family and the neighbors of Sean Fitzpatrick. I mean, we hear all sorts of things, or we read all sorts of things on the internet, you know, and it's amazing. The further people are away, the more mistrustful they are of the truth.
Excuse me, Trader in Red. We got a couple more callers. Let me get to the next one from the 813 area code. 813, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. This question is for both of the guests, and I appreciate you very much for being here. I'd like to hear what your opinion is of the difference between the first jury and the conclusion they came to, and the second jury and the conclusion they came to, and also what you think about this whole television plan for a television show around the trials. So I'm just going to hang up and listen, but I appreciate both of you, and I'd love to hear your opinions on those things. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Red, you want to go first to take that first?
I was ready for LT to do it.
I really don't have much of an opinion on either jury because, you know, I wasn't there, and Red was the one that saw it happen, so.
The first jury, like I had said earlier, the days were short. It took a long time. They, in the beginning, actually sat on the edge of their seats when they were listening to a lot of the stuff. There was some, well, it was televised, so there was a lot of, details going on. You know, it had sex, murder, you know, love triangle. It had everything going on in it. The second jury, I think, where they were all day, long days, they listened. We did have a problem with the jury. They read the Rodriguez Act. It looked like it was going to mistrial. And then, was it 2 days before? Let's see, it was the 19th. So the 17th, I believe it was, I was in court, and a juror was ill, and they replaced that juror, and they started deliberations all over again, and they came back with the verdict for the 19th, and I think they did a fantastic job.
Yes.
I guess the second part of her question.
The TV show or possibility of a TV series or something?
No, it's going to be on Dateline, which I don't know if they do that all over the country. It's a news program. They do a... from the beginning to the end. I think it'll be interesting to see the show, even though I lived it. I don't know a lot of people that actually chose to be on the show. Most of the people in the neighborhood decided to skip town before Dateline came to the neighborhood.
Did they interview you, Red?
No.
Okay.
No. I choose not to win. For my own reasons.
How about your mom?
No, my mom actually left for vacation probably 2 days before they came to Freedom, which is good. She doesn't want to be on TV. She had enough of that with the trial.
Well, when is this supposed to air? I hadn't heard about it before. Is that
they haven't given us a date yet. When there is a date, I'm going to make sure it's posted on J13.
Great, and thank you for that. And Trader, do you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I think Red covered most of the major points, but I do think that there is an effect when a television station such as True TV covers a case in the court, either live or close to live. I really think that has an impact on who can testify and what is testified to. and how nervous people are in the stand and that kind of thing. And I think it really, I mean, I'm all in favor of openness in our court system, but we have to take that with a certain degree of just moderation, I guess, in terms of how that may affect the course of justice. I have some feelings about that when we see these things carried out, especially in some of the most notorious trials we've seen in the last few years on television. Going back all the way to orange juice.
Yeah, good point. Okay, we have a caller from 617.
Ah.
617, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Hello?
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get on the air, but yeah, my name is Isaac. I'm a friend of some of the J13 gang. And we all met at the courthouse on the sentencing. And I knew a lot of behind-the-scenes action going on. I don't know if I can talk about it, or can I?
Well, as long as you don't libel or slander anybody, if you're reporting your opinion or fact, go ahead. Just okay. If something is fact, you know, let us know so we can keep separated what is opinion or guess versus what is known.
What I would, I'll put this as my opinion, so that will cover me from a lawsuit.
Okay.
It's my opinion that he was seen casing the area before the incident.
The defendant, Sean, was?
Well, yes. SF was seen casing the area. And I knew the two deceased and the murderer, the alleged murderer, I guess you could say it. But yeah, he was allegedly seen casing the joint. So that, you know, there's a lot of information that wasn't brought forth to the jurors, as we all know. And I'm really glad that the second jury got it right, because you know, I would have made a horrible juror because I knew the deceased and the defendant.
Right. Oh well, I'm glad you called in. Sean Fitzpatrick has lived in both Massachusetts and New Hampshire. I believe he lived in Concord, Massachusetts at one time.
I'm from Concord. I knew him. I knew some of his family members.
Ah.
And now he's over in Shirley, I guess, for the rest of his life.
Life terms, Isaac. Two life terms.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He got two life terms.
That's without parole or no?
Without parole.
Life without parole. That's the maximum penalty in Massachusetts. There's no death penalty in Massachusetts.
Death would be too kind. It was nice to meet you at the courtroom also.
Oh, I had a pleasure meeting you. I loved your mother. She was fantastic.
Thank you.
She didn't back down, and I thought about this case a whole lot. And I would like to know, I didn't catch this whole radio show from the beginning because I was having a hard time getting on the radio, on the computer. But I honestly think that Fred Martin's truck has really did him in.
Yeah.
And your mother's testimony, where she wouldn't back down to these, you know, really tough, Randy G, you know, she wouldn't back down. She says, oh, no, you know, he was at X amount of time, and I took so-and-so to the garage and blah, blah, blah. It was great. I can't wait to see it on Dateline myself.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And I do believe that Fred's truck was, you know, his downfall on using that, along with a lot of other things, you know, the break-ins in the neighborhood, the gun that was taken from the Zimitti's house, and you know, other items from other people's houses that were all used in the crimes.
Yeah, it was a total cumulative, you know, of everything that was done. It was no definite, you know, you know, the nail didn't get hit on the head with a hammer. It was just a total of a whole bunch of things. And he honestly made the biggest mistake of his life, is thinking he could get away with it. You know, from that point on, he wasn't thinking right. And I haven't seen the kid since 1994. And I hate, well, I don't hate to say it. I mean, back in those days, he wasn't a bad kid, but I was surprised to find out, you know, when I did find out, it was him that did this deed. And I was shocked. And from that point on, I watched the case real close. Unfortunately, the second trial wasn't on TV, which was really, you know, something I would have liked to seen. But I watched that first one because, you know, like I even knew his old girlfriend and his, actually, I even knew his ex-wife. She was a very nice girl at the time, but she had quite a downfall from what I understand.
Isaac?
Yes.
Yeah, excuse me for just a second. You know, you were so close to this and some of the people. Why don't you, can you hang on the line with us for a little bit? Maybe another caller would also like to include you with a question. Have you got time?
Oh, yeah, I got time. You know, I want to be careful what I say, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But you were close enough, too, that you, you know, like I say, somebody might have a question they'd like to ask you. We have another caller pending. Why don't I go to that caller and see what we've got, okay? Stand by.
Yeah, absolutely.
309 area code. You're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Hi, that would be me, Catfish. And I have a couple questions. One for anyone, probably Red would know more. Do you think that Michelle was involved in this, or in Kendi's words, was she just a stoop?
That's really hard to answer. One, because I'm still going to be in that neighborhood.
Okay.
Two, I think Michelle has her own accountability in it. She did, I think she should have been held accountable for some of her actions on it, yes. I do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have my own opinions because, of course, I can speak freely. I don't know her, and I don't know the family directly. But, you know, in a sense, we know that many, many people get involved in extramarital affairs, and that was part of what was going on here, a love triangle. And in a sense, what happened here, I think she was perfectly innocent to what could possibly result from this. I think she had no idea that Sean Fitzpatrick had such a mean streak in him, or could possibly have plotted to kill her husband. I just don't see a connection there. I also see her willingly cooperating with the police after any of this is found out, and after the police begin their investigation from all sources. She worked as willingly as possible to, she tape-recorded conversations to try to hook him in. There was a lot going on that she did to redeem herself, as far as I could see. Of course she feels guilty about what had happened in her life in terms of her infidelity, but I don't think there's any nefarious nature or plotting nature to that woman. I've never met her, but I mean, in terms of what I think, she was also an innocent victim.
I think what drew the suspicion towards her was the fact that she had said if he was gone, if something happened to him.
Right, right.
You know, I don't necessarily believe that she was involved either. And then another question is the Dateline. Does anyone know when that's going to be televised?
No, when they do, they are going to notify us. And when they do, I'll make sure that it's posted on J13. I'll make sure everybody knows from there.
Can I take a second, too, to thank you guys all for participating in this?
Oh.
You can.
I really appreciate that.
It's good to have you calling in, too.
Okay, well, I'm going to let it go. Let somebody else talk.
Thanks so much for the call.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
We've got a couple of chat room questions. One suggestion that we talked a little bit about the letter that was written apparently in the first trial threatening the Zamidi family.
Yes.
And why don't we address that? And then the second one, lest I forget, will be whether Isaac has anything to comment about Michelle. So let's start with the first letter, and who would like to handle that?
Well, there were two pieces of, I'll just jump in. There were two pieces of communication or mail that arrived at the Zimitti home. One was a condolence note or card. Of course, the DNA on that was matched with a second note that arrived, which said, get out of the business now or lose more people, lose your family, something like that. Both of those were the stamps. I can't imagine why people would lick stamps these days, but I guess they do.
Actually, I'm going to correct you on that.
The stamp
was not licked on it. I can give you a step-for-step how Sean got that letter mailed out, if you like.
I'm sorry?
Sean didn't lick the stamp on that. He actually went down to a post office
in another town
and got a pre-posted envelope, had the clerk write the address out. It wasn't even his writing on the envelope.
Right.
It was his DNA on the letter itself, a palm print the letter itself, which was cut out from magazines, close the business and lose more family.
Right, right. I'm sorry, I got my
confused. It's okay.
Thank
I've lived
you
this.
For correcting
okay.
Isaac, did you have any comment you would like to make about Michelle? Is it someone you knew or know or any thoughts?
No, I only worked with Mike Jr., boss in Big Dig, and I worked with Mike Sr. Numerous times, and you know, to me, he was when I worked with him, he was a great guy. That's my personal opinion, but you know, as far as Michelle goes, I never saw or heard or knew anything about her until the case came up. And when we were standing outside the courthouse after the sentencing, I wasn't sure what to make of it. I can guarantee you I did not see any tears outside the courthouse. But I have no opinion of her. I've never even seen her before, you know. So I can't say one thing one way or another.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, we're running low on time here. In fact, I'm going to put, thanks to Juror 13, an O Wise One, we have a two-minute ending as kind of a reminder for me to wind down. So I'm going to see if we can play that. And
okay.
Okay, what my question is, we haven't had a caller so far or a question or comment with anyone supporting or questioning the verdict or challenging the verdict. I understand, though, that there are people who don't agree with
right.
the verdict.
Right.
Do you folks that have been familiar with this, do you know what the reason is that people cite of why they felt the verdict was wrong or inappropriate?
Yeah, again, I'm going to jump in because I've read a lot of message board material on this in the last couple of days, just trying to get ready for the show. And although I don't agree with it, I'll just jump in and voice some of the things that I've been reading.
Right.
And one of them is the timeline is a little bit shaky, only in the sense that there's heavy traffic going into the Boston area from New Hampshire during those hours. How could he have made it down and back? And there was questioning on that. There is also questioning because the family does have an Italian-American name, Zimitti, and of course we all think of The Sopranos. We think of ganglands. We think of mafia. We think of all sorts of things like that. And what connection could this family have had to something like that? And of course that's all just speculation. There is a problem in the sense that Deshaun Fitzpatrick, the defendant, had counter-arguments to virtually every piece of DNA evidence that was presented, every picture. And, of course, this is the job of a defense attorney is to bring up and to question. And I think, you know, to question the facts. But when you look at the whole thing, when you look at the the means, motive, opportunity, and the DNA evidence, and the break-ins in New Hampshire, and the relationship between Sean and Michelle Zimiti, there really isn't much that's not conceivable here in terms of what actually happened. That's my thinking on the whole thing.
Okay, we just, in spite of my best efforts, we are over time again. We just got cut off of the live stream. We are being recorded on anything said here will be in the archives.
Right.
I'd like to thank all of you, certainly Trader and Red. I really appreciate you being on. Isaac, thanks for your call and your insights.
Thank
you to everyone who listened in the chat or listened to us and was in the chat room and had some questions, and also the callers. We really appreciate all the calls.
Well, thanks.
So,
I have a question for Red.
Go right ahead.
Red, sure. I've been through some family traumas. I've been through some hard times in my life when people were really having a hard time about this, but I've never been through a trial where a very close relative or mother or father or sister, brother, son, daughter had to actually testify and had to go through a mistrial and then another trial. How did that weigh on you and on your mom?
Well, I can tell you my father was also supposed to be a witness, but he suffered a major heart attack from the stress of all of it. My mother ended up having to get some help over her nerves. And, you know, just the stress to the whole family. I had other family members involved in this. And the stress to the whole family and worrying about our elderly parents. And you know, the Zimitis, because we do know them all. It was very, very heart-wrenching. And, you know, we've all had our illnesses and over it. You know, it really weighed on all of us. I can tell you, I was in Reno when the verdict came in, and I sat in the airport and cried my eyes out on the floor with my mother. I just sat right down in the airport on the floor when I got the call. In fact, Kimby called me first.
Well, that's just great. I mean, but you see how these kinds of things affect so many, many, many people. And I mean, you weren't, your family was not a victim, but you were, in another sense, a victim.
Well, yeah, I mean, we weren't victims, but unfortunately, when you know, I mean, we know the Zimitis, they're neighbors, they're across the street, be it it's over the summer, they're also there to help. I mean, Pat and Mike are always helping out. Where my parents help them, they help my family. You know, you do feel a personal connection, and we grieved them, you know, and we still do.
Right.
Excuse me a second. My hearing apparently isn't that good. Are you folks hearing music?
No.
Yes, we are.
I'm not. But maybe my phone is bad. I don't know.
Let me just...
That's okay. My phone's going to die, so I'm going to have to take a nap. And it's getting pretty late here on the East Coast, so...
Okay, well, again, thanks all of you very much, and I really appreciate your help in putting this together. And certainly very informative to have the insights you folks had and the closeness to this case. So I really appreciate it. And our next show will be on Wednesday, the 8th of April, and we'll be doing shows biweekly every Wednesday thereafter. So
thank
I hope
you
you'll be
much.
Back with us again.
Thanks.
Thank
great.
You.
Okay, bye. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Again, thanks to our panelists, callers, and we'll see you all, I hope, again on the 8th of April. Good night.